What about Destiny?
No, she tried, but I never allowed her. I didn't think I was capable of allowing myself to be so vulnerable.
I've kissed your neck before. I lifted up a little and leaned forward, his tip dragging against me and then finding my entrance. I only sat enough to keep it put.
You didn't notice, but I moved just enough to keep you to the sides, not directly down my throat.
I kissed lower still, at the base of his neck, before starting back up. I couldn't kill you like this.
No, but it's hard to explain.
He squeezed my arms as I made another pass, applying a little more pressure this time, feeling his heart thump under my palm.
It's a vulnerable place. A shifter won't heal in time from a wound like a slit throat or someone ripping our throats out. We'd bleed out too fast. Allowing someone access, even like this, is a feat of trust.
You wouldn't bleed out too fast. I kissed his lips and circled my hips, toying with pressure, his hard length slipping in just a bit before I moved away.
Damn it, Jacinta,
he growled, pushing upward. I evaded, not letting him find purchase. I'd heal you before you died, I said against his lips, kissing him hard, moving my body around him. Anticipation built.
My shield,
he said, pushing his chin up, inviting me in again. I raked my teeth along his throat as I sat down hard, moaning with the sensation. He crushed me to his chest, control fleeing in an instant. He pumped upward, spearing me deliciously, and I pushed against him, getting him deep. He sat up, his arms around me, helping me bob atop him, kissing my neck and lips. And again, I was lost to it, unable to think beyond the feel of our bodies intertwined, the heat within me, the feel of him. I groaned, gyrating, winding tighter, pleasure bearing down on me from all sides, almost unbearable in its intensity. An orgasm ripped his name from my lips, filling the room. Sensation filled my world. He shuddered below me, and I clung to him, breathing heavily. But he kept moving, going for one more and getting it a moment later. He pulled my hair with his release, and I smiled harder than I ever had as yet another wave of bliss washed through me, cracking me apart and piecing me together again. I wilted over him in the aftermath, completely spent, so full of warmth and light. Still holding me to him, he lay back, cradling me above him.
Sex has never felt this good before,
he said, his breathing starting to even out.
It's so easy with you. I barely have to try, and I'm always ready. Always. I'm never sated. I'm almost at the point of asking my brother if it's a medical condition or part of the mating or what.
If it's a medical condition, I hope there is no cure, I said, my eyelids drooping. I felt the rest of the team in the house, having come back sometime during our lovemaking. He stroked my hair.
We should probably go down to them and discuss what happened.
We should. Sebastian doesn't think that mage is going anywhere. Austin was silent for a moment, softly stroking my hair.
Do you think he has access to better forces?
Sebastian has reason to believe that he could and would by mercenaries. He nodded but didn't say anything. Instead, he pressed his hands against my lower back and swung upward, hard again. I put my worries out of my mind and lost myself again in Austin. There'd be plenty of time to worry tomorrow. Chapter 32. 2 days later, we all sat or stood around a circular white table in the backyard, the sun bright, the grass green, and the apology invitation open on the table, completely unbelievable. Kinsella was sorry. He hadn't meant to offend me. He wanted to make it up to me with dinner and dancing at the banquet hall in O'Brien's. I could bring my friends. He'd probably sneered as he wrote that word. My rage was a hurricane inside of me.
Why are we doing this outside?
Hollis asked, his glass of champagne almost empty.
Because it's a nice day.
Cyrus' champagne was boiling, steam rising from the glass. She could transfer heat to anything with a simple touch.
She apparently didn't much care for champagne.
Yes.
Mr. Tom slid a plate of melon slices wrapped in prosciutto onto the table.
Easter was so nice, I thought we might do something similar. I did not hide any eggs, though. I didn't want to offend God.
That's not... I shook my head, letting it go.
This is a trap,
Austin said, in jeans and a t-shirt, his hair rumpled and a spot of blood on his neck. A grizzly bear shifter had challenged him earlier in the day. He was happy to have acquired the shifter for his pack, but the sight of his gashes and seeping wounds had not made me happy. In the future, I intended to be at hand for challenges like that. I didn't give a crap how shifters did things. I would not allow someone to kill Austin.
Traps are good. We get to flex our muscles, Cyrus said.
It takes a lot of the risk out of it when you come back from the dead. Ulrich scanned the ground, even though Mr. Tom had said he hadn't hidden any eggs.
Yes, but dying still hurts, she replied.
Little flames replaced the steam at the top of her glass.
Dying at the hand of the Alpha was not pleasant.
Sebastian stood a few feet away in the sun, watching the Basajown eat flowers near the tree line. He'd come to check on me. The mage had foolishly sent the vampires after the shifters following our dinner, something that hadn't ended well for the vampires, and the Basajown had heard the fighting through the trees.
I called the closest office of magical mercenaries,
Sebastian said.
They're sold out. They had access to 50 contractors, but they wouldn't tell me if the same person took them all.
There's an office for that stuff? I asked, leaning my elbows on the table.
Of course,
he replied.
How else would you hire them?
That seems awfully civilized, I murmured.
Tell me about the banquet hall,
Kingsley said, sitting beside his brother. Austin leaned back and rubbed his fingers through his hair.
It's a large facility used for weddings or special events, able to house 300 probably. The inside is mostly open. There are four rooms, a main room, an entrance area, and a kitchen and dining room grouped together. Very few places to hide. The grounds are geared toward pictures and parking mostly. There's a large lot with plenty of space for us to maneuver the limos. The trick is that the place is on a rolling hill leading up a mountain. Great views, but the only way in and out for a car is a narrow two-lane road with very few pullouts. Block that road and you block road transportation.
What do we care about road transportation?
Kingsley asked.
Why do we care about road transportation?
Ulrich asked with a laugh.
That sounds like the perfect setup for flyers.
If you go in,
Kingsley told Austin,
you cannot leave until the battle is done. If you go running, it'll undermine Ivy House and your territory. Mercenaries for hire can be strong contenders. They have advanced weapons and are capable of handling all manner of magical creatures. 50 or so of those, plus whomever he's called in from home, plus the people we didn't take out the other night.
Failing to show won't look any better,
Austin said,
though we could just refuse his...
We're not going to fail to show, and we're not going to go running, I said. I gave him an opportunity to leave. He chose to double down on being a dick. So now, we'll send a message. Sebastian nodded, still watching the Basajown. So was Edgar, quietly sitting at the table, his champagne untouched. Why anyone had poured him any, I had no clue.
Kingsley, can I have a word?
Austin said before glancing back at me.
Jess?
We walked a few paces away from the others, and I wrapped us in a soundproof bubble. Austin's voice was low, despite the spell protection.
I've dealt with mercenaries around here before. They are unnecessarily vicious, and they don't fight fair. They aim to kill, and they can do it from a distance. They'll go for the most powerful first. Mercenaries are the same everywhere.
Kingsley's hands stayed at his sides, but he somehow gave the illusion of flaring them wide, bracing for a fight.
His people were nothing. Those mercenaries will be our real adversaries. His people can be used to create chaos.
Austin squared off with his brother, and I realized there was something behind the scenes here that I didn't understand.
Sheer numbers can dominate in something like this, and he'll have those numbers. I can feel it. They're going to try to trap us.
Let them,
Sebastian said, stepping toward us. Austin and his brother shot him fearsome looks and he grimaced.
No one else can hear you. It's just me. Jess's spells are really coming along, but she hasn't fixed this one. It's pretty easy to circumvent, if I may.
He sidled closer, hunched a little, and with his hands up, a defensive posture, and I expanded the bubble to include him.
They're trying to trap you. Let them. We have two powerful mages and the most fearsome alpha in the world whose rage is tethered by a deteriorating leash. That's all we need to win.
Two of the most fearsome alphas,
Kingsley growled.
You have a family at home, Kingsley Barraza,
Austin replied, his eyes hard.
This isn't your fight. You've been an incredible help to me, but my little niece needs a father. I nearly took you from her once. I will not do it again. Your little niece isn't so little anymore, and she would scold me if I walked away from Uncle Ozzy at a time like this.
Kingsley leaned in a little, and my small hairs stood on end.
We're brothers. I've got your back, no matter what. I'm in this.
They stared at each other for a tense moment. Sebastian scooted away again, hunching even more now. As though a bubble burst, both men breathed out and their postures relaxed. Austin held out his hand, and Kingsley grabbed it, pulling him into a bro hug.
Don't think I won't call you if someone tries to steamroll my pack,
Kingsley told Austin.
I'd expect nothing less.
They stepped back, and I popped the bubble of silence, making a mental note to ask Sebastian how to make a better one.
Now that that's settled, whatever it was.
Mr. Tom walked over with a silver tray laden with champagne.
Care for another drink, anyone?
Do you have any beer?
Kingsley asked.
At a garden party?
Mr. Tom put up his nose and pushed the tray forward.
I most certainly do not.
Kingsley took the champagne, staring Mr. Tom down all the while.
Go ahead, do your worst.
Mr. Tom responded.
I'm used to it.
Austin turned to Sebastian.
You said two powerful mages. Do you plan to do more than lurk this time?
Sebastian gave a humorless grin.
I most certainly do, and I can't wait to see their faces when I let the magic fly.
I'd accepted the invitation shortly after receiving it, and now, 2 days later, we were preparing to walk into the belly of the beast. Austin sat at the table by my bedroom window, waiting for me to finish getting ready. He had on jeans and a t-shirt. We'd decided there was no point in being uncomfortable for what was surely going to be a battle. His people were assembled and ready, along with Kingsley and his people, all waiting at the base of the mountain in animal form. They would scale the mountain with Edgar, and Austin, Sebastian, and I would drive up. The Bassajown, who'd offered to help because he'd overindulged in flowers at the forced garden party, Niev maintained that he'd done it on purpose because he wanted to come all along, would ride with us. Sebastian was the one who'd made the suggestion about the ride-along. He wanted to see the mages' faces when they caught sight of our fearsome friend. Given the Bassajown's great love was causing horrible surprises, he'd been tickled by the idea. The rest of my people would fly in as we drove, swooping down when the action started. Speaking of my team, I want to give Syrah, Hollis, and Nathaniel more time, I called to Austin, because I haven't gotten to properly interact with them, but it seems like the right time to ask Sebastian to join the team. What do you think?
I'd say it's a good bet. He's done nothing but help you, and he gets along with everyone.
I nodded. Good. I mean, we'll see how he does with the possibly very awkward and embarrassing dinner and dancing coming up.
Fat chance.
We'll see how he does in the battle, then.
I think the team is shaping up to be really strong, babe,
he said, standing when I exited the bathroom. I walked into his arms, needing a moment to lean on him, to soak in his strength. It still felt surreal that we were together, that someone as hot as him was calling me babe. The most desirable bachelor in the area, for Janes and magical people alike, had said he'd wait for me to come around and be his mate. Good, I said, but I'm still not looking forward to this. I huffed out a shaky laugh. You'd think I'd be used to fighting by now.
I don't think you'll ever get used to bloodshed, but you, Jacinta Ironheart, are strong enough to bear anything.
Let's hope.
I pushed away from him, lest I lose my nerve. Showtime! My people were waiting in the front, all in human form, all seemingly calm and ready. Austin's jeep waited by the curb, the top off. Ulrich reached out and squeezed my arm supportively.
We've got this, Miss Jessie.
I smiled, nodding to Mr. Tom and the others as I passed them. No fancy car today? I asked, turning to Austin.
Nope.
He stopped by the passenger door in case I needed a hand in.
They get plain old me today. No bells and whistles.
I don't think they are going to like plain old you. I have a feeling they will rethink their treatment of the bells and whistles you.
I think you're right.
Sebastian and the Bassajown climbed in after us, the Bassajown completely scrunched in the smallish back seat with his legs half-hanging over the side, and Sebastian sitting as far to the right as possible, squished against the roll bar.
I'm now starting to rethink this driving idea,
Sebastian murmured. Austin started the jeep, and my people shed their clothes, Niev giving me a thumbs up before changing into her nightmare alicorn form.
You'll do great, miss.
Mr. Tom yelled after me as Austin made his way down the street. I felt Sebastian touch my arm from the back seat.
It'll be okay. You have a lot of people around you who will make sure nothing happens to you.
I took a deep breath. I'm not concerned about me. I don't want anyone else to get hurt. I thought I heard him mutter, Ironheart, before he squeezed my arm and pulled back. The banquet hall was on the outskirts of town. As Austin maneuvered the jeep down the narrow road, I felt my people on their way, high in the sky. I couldn't see any shifters, but they'd never required invisibility spells to blend into the woods. The saffron-yellow sunlight was starting to fade by the time we reached the top of the hill, the mountain at our backs, and the valley spanning out in front of us. This time, large passenger vans filled the lot instead of limos. It was obvious they weren't here to square dance, and judging by the quantity, nearly a dozen, it was equally as clear that they had a great many people. Nervousness tightened in my gut. The sound of the jeep's engine vibrated through the silence as Austin slowed down. Sebastian tapped my arm and passed up a vial, the revealing serum. Since we'd already discussed the likelihood that Kinsella would take a sneakier approach this time, hiding the mage's scents too, Austin also downed one of the vials. Bodies started popping into view. Austin stopped at the beginning of the long driveway, the expanse of lawn off to the left showcasing a picturesque white gazebo nestled into bright pink and blue flowers. The hill dropped away just beneath it, probably a steep slope to the valley below. A lone figure waited within the gazebo wearing a long black robe. He hadn't taken an invisibility potion, but everyone else around him had. Mages clustered around the gazebo, lined up on either side, and loitered around the trees on my side of the car, too, at the base of the mountain.
What a showboat,
Sebastian said, clearly talking about Kinsella waiting for me in the gazebo. I don't understand why he went to the trouble of dosing them all with invisibility potion, knowing I can just create a revealing serum. Part of me wanted to sit on my shaking hands. I'd come to realize that the calm leading up to the battle greatly tested my courage. Or did he think I'd keep it from the shifters? Sebastian chuckled low.
He has clearly spent the last 2 days making or procuring the very best he can get. He probably doesn't think your revealing spell is powerful enough to show his people. He's a fool who didn't pay attention the other night. And no, he surely doesn't think you gave all the shifters the revealing potion, or that you could make so much in such a short time. Of course, he also doesn't know you had help.
Out of the corner of my eye, I caught a vial being passed.
Here, Bassajown, so you can see the surprise on their faces when you charge them away from the gazebo. Jess?
Austin turned to me, a bleak look in his eyes.
This mage came to our territory, insulted us, and now plans to attack us on our own ground. This has to be grounds for an excusal from the Mages Guild. We have to end this brutally. We have to make a statement. This isn't the time to show mercy. Make sure mercenaries everywhere use you, us, as a cautionary tale. Do you understand?
Yes, I said, sensing the truth in that.
People would continue coming if they thought we were weak or lenient. I just wish we were fighting Elliot Graves so we could end this once and for all.
If this goes how I think it'll go,
Sebastian said,
Domino Kinsella won't be the only one who hears the message. We ready?
Austin turned off the engine and swung his legs out the open door. Apparently, we'd be walking a ways. As if hearing my thought, Austin said,
I want them to see what the big hairy beast in the back is as he's running at them.
Yes, that will be a better approach.
The Basajown's hair bristled, making him look just that much bigger. He crawled out over the back of the car.
Should I go now?
No.
Austin stripped off his shirt.
Jess and I will make the first approach. When they attack, we counter.
Miss Jessie,
Sebastian said, grabbing my arm.
Remember that shield spell we went over. Use it. Keep it around you at all times. It'll keep his spells off you.
I nodded and pulled it around me right then. Austin slipped out of his pants and immediately changed into his polar bear form. He started forward and I kept pace, walking with my head held high, my body brimming with magic. Time to show Kinsella the goods. Maybe he'd be smart, apologize, and leave. Fat chance. Kinsella's people watched us approach, having created a funnel for us to walk down, a funnel that closed in behind us as we passed them, separating us from the Basajown. My heart beat faster, the pulse joined by Austin's. Our link was not just from Ivy House now, but from the strengthening bond growing between us. It comforted me, energized me, gave me just a bit more courage.
He isn't even trying to hide that he's an animal anymore, huh?
Kinsella gave Austin a look of pure disgust as we approached. Just like you aren't trying to hide your ridiculous taste in clothing. What is that, a nightshirt? I stopped just before the gazebo. My people weren't far away, having stopped at the base of the hill to keep out of sight. I looked around. No champagne? When I show up to dinner and dancing, I typically expect some sort of libation.
I likely won't get any sort of status boost when I kill you and all your animals, but at least I will let Elliot Graves know that he is nothing. There is some consolation in that.
You sure do know how to make a woman feel treasured. Speaking of, where's your date? Or have you put away the Viagra for the night? His eyes narrowed slightly, and I actually found myself laughing. Struck a nerve with that one, did I? I laughed harder.
I will enjoy killing you,
he spat. Actually, you won't even enjoy trying. He threw out his hands, a zip of light speeding through the air at me. I braced myself, but the shield took it easily, the spell like one I've used before, but with more bells and whistles. His spell bounced off, fractured, then enhanced, increasing in power as it sprayed back at him. He screeched and dove out of the back of the gazebo. Two of his people, waiting behind him, threw up their hands as the spell sliced right through them. He'd shot a nasty spell at me, and an even nastier one had been sent back. Austin stood up on his hind legs and roared, the sound rumbling through the ground and crowding the air. Everyone in the area flinched and then cowered, unable to help themselves. A loud bang came from the banquet door. It flew off its hinges and tumbled onto the walkway. Men and women in black poured out of the door, all dressed the same, holding weapons and moving with lethal economy. Magical mercenaries. An answering roar rode the tail of Austin's call, and then the Basajown launched himself into the fray, his long legs and hairy body quickly eating the distance between him and the enemy. He was at the gazebo in no time, his large teeth flashing, his arms swinging, and the enemy's eyes rounded comically.
It's Bigfoot!
Someone shouted, the pitch much too high for a man, but coming from one all the same.
It's Bigfoot! Save yourselves!
Kinsella swallowed down a potion as the invisible people around me rushed forward, firing spells at us. Austin lowered and rushed right out of my protective bubble and not worried about it. He swiped a woman with his great paw, smashing her to the side, before lunging forward and biting through a man's face. My belly rolled and I turned away, my defensive spell doing my work for me. Even still, I zipped off a few more spells as the Basajown scooped someone up, bashed their head on the ground, and then threw them over the lip of the hill. He charged someone else, who immediately reduced down into a little ball of person, his arms over his head, shaking. He wasn't going to try to defend himself, too scared of the giant beast charging him. The Basajown's laughter at what he perceived a great joke made his incredible violence that much more gruesome.
Jesse! Kinsella!
Sebastian stood in the center of the driveway, his own shield up and taking fire. He had just enough time to fling up a hand. Kinsella had slipped out of the melee, coward that he was, and was now sprinting for the banquet hall. But Austin and I were surrounded, under constant firepower, and their sheer numbers were doing the work for them. Shifters exploded out of the trees at the base of the mountain. Wolves, big cats, a couple of bears, and one hippopotamus of all things. Another group charged over the edge of the hill and onto the grass, a great Siberian tiger, Kingsley, leading the charge. The mercenaries spread out in front of the banquet hall, movements unhurried, weapons at the ready. They would be the real danger. I blasted someone with a spell. He fell away, revealing another enemy mage ready to fire at me. A snow leopard, Leyen, flew through the air, tackling the mage and knocking him out of the way. I ran forward, just seeing Kinsella slip past his line of paid fighters. More people poured out of the banquet hall, the building clearly storing everyone who hadn't gotten potion. My swear was drowned out by the cacophonous beating of the Thunderbird's wings as Hollis rose into the sky. Syra came next, then Ivy House's gargoyle crew, followed by the gargoyles from town, organized and ready for battle. Nyev jetted out from behind and didn't waste any time. She pulled in her wings, tucked up her feet, and dove horn first. It hit a woman in the back and punched through. Her scream was short-lived, and Nyev tossed the woman over her back so she could move on to the next enemy. The first line of mercenaries, nearly to Sebastian, took a knee and brought up their guns.
Oh, no!
I ran harder, straight for him, not knowing what I'd do against actual bullets, but not wanting him to take the brunt of this by himself. Kinsella would have to wait.
No, Jesse.
Sebastian flung out his hand to stop me. A wave of magic materialized in my path. I slammed into it and bounced off, knocked onto my butt. I brushed it off and sprang up as the mercenaries fired, some aiming for Sebastian, some aiming for shifters. They weren't actual bullets. Zips of color, like lasers, shot out. Yelps blared through the space. A bear roared, a sound that was half pain, half anger. Sebastian threw up his hands, probably to fortify his shield. Syra swooped down out of nowhere in phoenix form. Mouth open, she ingested the zip of color meant for Sebastian. Fire flew out of her rear before she turned, flapping her wings for speed, and dive-bombed the mercenaries, blasting them with fire. Thunder rolled across the plain, and Hollis dove as well. The mercenaries didn't so much as flinch. Those who were standing tilted up their guns to aim at him. They fired, but before the light could pierce Hollis, he let out another thunderous roar. Lightning charged the air around him, eating away whatever magic was fired from those guns. Vampires rushed out from behind the mercenaries, lunging for the shifters. Gargoyles dove out of the sky, grabbing them and pulling them up, digging their claws in before dropping them. A fall like that wouldn't kill them, but Edgar was waiting down below. He turned from swarm to himself, grabbed a newly splatted vampire, and ripped off its head. The kneeling mercenaries continued to fire, hitting vampires and shifters, not at all caring who was friendly and who was the enemy. More agonized howls and yelps filled the air as the colorful blasts found their marks. A few wolves reached the mercenaries, lunging into the crowd. Two of the mercs, a man and a woman, stood and slung their guns over their backs. Knives came out of nowhere, and then they were all action, grappling with the large wolf bodies, their movements lightning fast. The woman plunged a knife into a furry belly, then dragged it across the wolf's throat.
No!
I shed my clothes and changed, taking to the sky to get there faster. A A zip of magic came for me, one of those lasers. It hit my shield and tried to bleed my magic away, but power boiled in my blood, fueled by the agonized wails all around me. By the vampires reaching the shifters, by Sebastian barely able to fight mages back while defending whomever he could against the mercenaries, by all of this unnecessary violence that Kinsella had forced on us. I pumped my wings as hard as I could, pushing for speed. Syra dive-bombed the line again, taking fire and giving it back. Hollis dove, snatching up a person in black in each taloned foot before swooping up, his electric energy taking them out instantly. I was there a moment later, scraping across someone's face and sending a blast of magic through their line. It exploded, tossing people into the air, but not before two of them got off shots. Their blasts hit Sebastian's shield and bled through it, striking his body. A cry of fury shot out of me, slightly garbled by my fangs. Dark rage rose through me. I ripped out a throat with my claws and sent a magical kill shot of a spell, ripping someone apart, before covering the short distance to Sebastian. I grabbed him around the chest and hips, using my clawed feet as another way to hold him, and soared into the sky. I used my healing magic on him right away, cutting out his pain. Anguish in my heart, I lowered him onto the roof of the banquet hall, figuring it was the safest place for him. I set him down gently, splaying my clawed hand over the bleeding wound in his side and taking in his leg. Blood soaked through his shirt and pants. Those wounds would be closed shortly, hopefully before he bled out.
"Must help others,"
I said, hoping he understood. He nodded, and a little smile tickled his lips.
"Ironheart, you have my allegiance. Forever."
That answered the question of whether he would take the job. I patted his shoulder and took to the sky. If Austin wanted brutal, I'd give these people brutal. Chapter 33 Sebastian waited for the angel of a woman to fly away, vengeance on her mind. He watched her descend on the mercenaries a moment later, swirls of pink and purple magic trailing her, wondrous and beautiful. She was everything his research had said she'd be, and then some. Beautiful of mind and body, majestic, and so insanely powerful that he was giddy just thinking about it. She had absolutely no idea the kinds of things she could do with that power. How unstoppable she'd be. Assuming she didn't go the way of the others and fall for the wrong man. The magic could be transferred between Jessie and her mate when she chose one. From what Sebastian had read, the ability was meant to help the mate protect her. Unfortunately, in the past, the heirs had chosen handsome young douches who'd wanted the power for themselves. They always died, of course, but they usually brought the heir down with them. By then it was too late to alter the way the magic worked. This time, though. The powerhouse of a polar bear shifter crossed the distance to Jessie in a rush of his own power, his ferocity and prowess unmatched. Not even a mythical phoenix could tear him down. The Alpha wouldn't want to try to steal the Ivy House magic. He probably wouldn't even accept a gift like that from Jessie unless there was no other way. Ivy House had chosen well in its heir. And the heir had chosen well in her mate, or soon would. It seemed like they were still dancing around each other, each afraid to fall into the void of hearts and flowers and forever. Sebastian groaned as he rolled onto his side, not feeling the pain, but all too conscious that it was there. He'd let too much of the spear gun leak through, a magical gun intended specifically for harming mages. The guns weren't powerful enough to pierce his shield unless he was struck by seven at the same time, or unless he allowed it to happen. He'd hoped someone would remove him from battle, or that he'd get the green light to crawl away. Being put on the roof hadn't entered into his plans, though. On his hands and knees, he crawled toward the back of the building until his wounds had healed enough for him to stand and walk. Jessie's healing magic was on the case, plus his own fast healing patched him up. Moving so soon probably wasn't the greatest of ideas, but he couldn't wait. Very soon, Domino Kinsella would realize he had greatly underestimated the up-and-coming mage, and he'd get out of town. He was a fool, but he knew how to survive.
Sebastian had to find him before he snuck away. At the edge of the roof, Sebastian found a tree close enough to jump to, but that was more of a plan B. If he took the tree root, he'd probably miss the branch, fall, and break his neck. Jesse's magic wouldn't be able to save him from that. A couple of moments later, he spotted a trellis with ivy. After slipping twice, knocking his knee and skinning his ankle, he finally managed to descend onto flat ground. His magical tracker spell pulsed in his middle. Somewhere right. His target was somewhere right. He'd known it would go down like this the second he'd heard Domino issue that invitation to Jesse. Domino was a useless and disgusting mage who hated shifters more than most. Any idiot could have predicted he would not want to work with Jesse, and sure enough, he'd give offense at every turn. Sebastian had thought the Alpha would crack Kinsella's neck in that first meeting, but it was Jesse who'd reacted, defending her mate. Very cute. Sebastian had put a tracker spell on Kinsella before he'd left the restaurant. Nothing to it. The pulse grew stronger. The shouts and roars of the battle floated on the light breeze around the side of the building where Domino hid in a cluster of bushes. A peal of thunder drowned out the lessening blasts of the guns. The mercenaries were almost done, and they were the only ones capable of putting up a real fight.
"What kind of an idiot would pick a fight?"
Sebastian began, cutting himself off to deflect a spell that burst from the bushes. He tisked.
"That won't work on me, Domino. You should know that. As I was saying, what kind of an idiot would pick a fight with a mage who has a thunderbird and a phoenix at her disposal? Are you that dumb or just suicidal?"
Another blast of magic erupted from the bushes, the power nothing. He waved it away and then let the illusion dissolve to reveal his true appearance.
"Is that how you treat an old friend, Domino?"
Domino's face appeared against the leaves, his eyes rounded, his expression one of utter disbelief.
"Elliot Graves,"
he whispered. Sebastian gave a little bow, acknowledging the name he'd chosen for himself in the magical world. Birth names, Sebastian in this case, were only for friends and family, and for new potential allies. Jesse wasn't ready to find out that he was Elliot Graves, not after all the hell he'd put her through, but hopefully she'd come around. He was well aware he'd have to eat crow. He'd come clean to Ivy House, however. He'd visited the Room of Crystals and offered himself up to it. It could have killed him right then, or at any time thereafter. Instead, it had offered him more resources with which to train Jesse. The house had clearly agreed with him. His actions might not be conventional, but they were necessary. His master plan was coming along. Sebastian just had to convince Jesse of that, preferably without the big Alpha ripping his throat out before he could finish. But before that could happen, there was one more trick he had to pull off, one more little fib he would need to tell. He knew Jesse was about to offer him a role on her team. If the circumstances had been different, he'd have taken it in a heartbeat, but the time wasn't right. The Alpha had a bit more work to do on his territory, and Jesse needed to get those others on her crew, and then all could be revealed, and Sebastian could grovel for the first and only ally he ever planned to take. His late sister's sight, the seeing that had killed her, would not go ignored.
"In the flesh,"
Sebastian said.
"Pray tell, what are you doing here?"
"What are you doing here?"
Domino stepped out of the bushes.
"I'm protecting my interests, obviously. I thought it was quite clear to anyone listening that Jacinta of Ivy House was mine."
Domino sneered.
"All due respect, you always were a disgrace. You'd work with her team."
"Oops, your ignorance is showing."
Sebastian lifted his eyebrows.
"Her team is incredible. Even you should see that. It is so confusing to me. She's a female gargoyle with a thunderbird, a phoenix, a puka, and other gargoyles on her team. Every one of them turns from human into something else, yet you're so fixated on shifters."
He put out his finger and Domino flinched.
"It's fear, isn't it? Shifters are terrifying. They are a force all their own, especially the Alpha ones. Watch out for those, by the way."
He rolled his eyes.
"Oh, what am I saying? You won't need to watch out for them. You'll be dead."
Domino's sneer was a defense mechanism.
What do you think you'll do? I'm protected by the Mages Guild. They will claim vengeance for my death.
Sebastian laughed.
The Mages Guild would surely go after Jacinta Ironheart, this is true. But we both know they won't dare come after me, which is why I will spare her the hardship and kill you myself.
A peal of thunder rolled through the sky, temporarily drowning out a few remaining gun blasts. It was almost over. Sebastian had to hurry this up.
What do you want?
Domino straightened up.
Money? Meetings with my connections to get back into the magical elite? Done. If you want the half-wit mage, have her. She's nothing. I was simply curious.
I have all the money I could ever want, actually. And no, I don't need your paltry connections. I need a body. My plans won't work without one. You'll do nicely. Your ugly mug doesn't matter much because I'll give you a new one. Mine, if you must know. Well, not mine exactly, but the one I've been wearing.
He let himself grin.
Around the shifter, she never worried about its expressionlessness. That was a stroke of luck.
Fear crept into Kinsella's eyes and his brow lowered.
You're nothing. Momar owns the magical world now, not you. He pushed you aside. You're lucky he didn't kill you.
He certainly tried.
Sebastian took a step forward.
There is a difference between stepping back from the magical world and being pushed aside. I wanted to see about some predictions made by my late sister. My situation these past years was entirely voluntary and entirely temporary. Soon I will reemerge. Hopefully I will do it with the only female gargoyle in existence and the most powerful shifter alive. Soon I will take Momar's nightmares directly to him and watch him dance.
Chapter 34. Silence descended around us. Movement slowed and then stopped, my team looking around for anyone still standing. None of our enemies were. Those who hadn't fallen had fled. Sucking in deep breaths, I changed back into my human form.
Check our people, I called out. Make sure no one is too badly hurt. Call me if someone needs healing.
I looked around the ground for my clothes, trying to stand straight and tall like the nakedness wasn't bothering me. Shifters started moving immediately, some changing into human form and others staying furry. Syra changed into human as well, her clothes magically still on. Totally unfair. She didn't check on our side, though. She checked on theirs. If she found someone moving around, she fixed the glitch.
No, let them...
It has to be done,
Kingsley said, also naked and giving me plenty of space. It shocked me mute, and I stared really hard at his face so I didn't give in to curiosity and accidentally check if he was blessed with size like his brother.
You have to send a message that you will not tolerate attacks.
Other shifters changed, Austin being one of them, and he immediately started looking after his people. He glanced my way but didn't say anything. He was leaving the call up to me. I bit my lip as Syra moved on to someone else. She pointed, and Hollis swooped down to blast the man with electricity. They were dividing up the gore for sport, it seemed like, for fun. My stomach turned, my jaw hurt from clenching my teeth. Sebastian limped out from around the side of the banquet hall, holding his side. The sight of his wounds tore at me.
No.
I continued to stare at Kingsley. I saw the spark of violence in his eyes, the evidence that he was not used to having his authority challenged. But he had no authority here.
No,
I repeated. I threw bands around Syra to keep her from cracking a wounded woman's neck. She struggled, trying to burn through my magic. I wouldn't allow it. I can't do this. We will not continue to assassinate the wounded. That is not what I stand for. They will be given a chance to reform. I raised my voice and backed it by magic. If you are still alive, you will remain so. I'll do everything I can to make sure of that. But if you ever come back here intending to do me or mine harm, I'll kill you myself. Is that clear? I didn't wait for them to respond. I assumed they wouldn't. Nor did I need Kingsley's curt nod. I would not compromise my own principles because things were done differently in the magical world. My people would have to live with that or they could leave.
Jesse, how can I help?
Sebastian asked as he neared me.
Can you heal?
No, not without a camping stove pot and potion ingredients.
Then just rest. I'll handle it. A roar ripped through the battlefield, and the Basajown literally drop-kicked someone over the edge of the hill, their body somersaulting through the air before it landed awkwardly and rolled away. He stuck up his hand, not turning.
Last one, Miss Jessie. He tried to stab me. Vengeance was necessary. It is done.
I just blinked at him for a second. I didn't miss Kingsley's tiny smile before it morphed back into his hard alpha frown. Shaking my head, I got to work. A few hours later, Austin pulled up to Ivy House, and I just sat in the passenger seat, exhausted in a way I hadn't known I could be. There had been a lot of people to heal. A lot. Each took energy. Some had required a lot of energy. I'm pissed Kinsella took off, I said, not lifting my head off the headrest. He left all his people to fight and die for him, and he just left? What kind of coward is that?
Mages aren't usually on the front line, Sebastian said from the back seat.
The Basajown hadn't come back with us. He decided to head back to his mountain through the trees. I suspected he wanted to see if he could track down any escapees and deal with them how he saw fit. Gargoyles landed on the front grass, the night cloaking them. Syra and Hollis followed, the night showing off their respective flames and lightning. The police would probably get a few calls of unidentified animals flying through the night sky, but Austin's inside guy would hopefully handle it. The rest of my people had already landed, Edgar having been carried. It would be an incredibly long flight as a swarm of insects. You were, I commented as Austin got out of the jeep.
I wasn't doing it for myself, Sebastian said. I was doing it for you. Difference, I'm a peon and you're a gargoyle, so we aren't breaking any stereotypes, in case that might bother you.
I smiled, happy he was okay. Can you stay a little while, for tea or a beer or something?
Sure, I'm too tired to walk home right now anyway.
Austin stopped next to me and, before I realized what he was doing, lifted me into his arms. I'm not hurt, I told him, though I didn't try to escape his arms. I didn't want to.
You're more powerful than those spear guns,
he murmured, his voice low and still full of pride. I leaned my head against his shoulder. I guess so.
Are we thinking dinner or a snack?
Mr. Tom asked as Austin walked me to the door, having just shifted back to human.
We're thinking you need to cover your bollocks, Nev said. They're down around your ankles.
It is an awful burden to have your company always forced upon us.
Mr. Tom sniffed as he followed Austin and me indoors. I'm starving, I told Mr. Tom.
Perfect. I shall prepare something and alert you when it's ready. Austin Steele, will your brother be joining us?
No, he's going straight back to my house. Sebastian, follow us.
Austin took me back to my smaller, mostly private sitting room and situated me on his lap. It wasn't strictly the most professional setup, but I didn't care to fix it.
You were magnificent today,
he said as Sebastian detoured through the kitchen, apparently thinking he needed to take the long way and give us a moment.
I'm glad you stood up to my brother. I would have done things differently, but you need to stick up for what you believe in. I respect that.
You did do things differently. I saw your guys help a few of the wounded into that good night. Austin trailed his lips along my jaw.
It was your fight, but it happened in my territory, so bygones? They were calling us filthy names.
I closed my eyes, soaking in the feel of his lips against my skin. That's what I figured. I didn't try very hard to save the surly ones.
You saved a good few mercenaries.
Yeah, well, they were just doing a job. Nev said that if I saved their lives, they would never take a job against me again.
They won't, especially since a good few of them want to join our territory.
Our territory? He touched my chin and gently applied pressure until my lips were close to his.
Yes, some called it yours. Some called it mine, some called it ours. I think ours makes the most sense. Your interactions with a magical world will always spill out of this property. You need to have a say in how things are handled.
He kissed me softly. Is that allowed, though? Won't your people be confused?
Nothing about our setup is normal. They won't be any more confused than they are now.
He kissed me again as Sebastian approached the door. Then Austin rose, lifting me with him, and deposited me onto the couch.
I know you want to ask him about joining the council, so I'll let you talk to him alone. When you're done, I'll meet you in your bedroom.
A rush of heat stole through me, and I nodded. Sebastian, just about to enter, hunched down and backed up, letting Austin pass.
Hey,
Sebastian said, straightening up as he came in. He stalled by the door.
Open or closed?
Closed, please. He shut the door, and I closed my eyes and leaned back.
Tired?
He asked.
I mean, I know you're tired, but...
I am, yes. I've never done so much healing. Fighting with magic didn't actually tire me out like it has in the past, like... I frowned. Kind of at all. It felt so much easier.
They were all so far below you. If we were to battle, it would be a different story, or another mage of my caliber.
You'd kill me pretty easily.
In a one-on-one fight away from Ivy House, yes, I probably would, but only because I have more experience. Add in your alpha and his shifters, and I wouldn't give myself great odds, even with a team. I might run like Kinsella did.
I frowned as my eyes met his pale gray gaze. What do I do about that? Do I hunt him down or assume he's learned his lesson?
In the magical world, normally, I'd say you'd have to hunt him down, but you'd need to take him out in a cunning way in cold blood, and I don't know that you are capable of that. Plus, your territory is not entirely established yet. Let him run in disgrace. If he resurfaces in any meaningful way and he is a thorn in your side, then you take him out.
I nodded, taking a deep breath. Listen, I wondered. First, do you know how the setup works here, the link with the Ivy House crew?
Yes,
he said, and his eye color almost seemed to shift to the palest shade of blue, excitement sparking deep inside of them. In a moment, though, the effect was gone. My fatigue was getting to me. My desire to go upstairs and cuddle Austin was almost overwhelming. I wondered, would you like to join my crew? You'd get a room here and youthful vigor, though maybe you don't need it, plus the other perks Ivy House has to offer.
I would, yes. But maybe,
he looked down at himself,
if I could shower.
Oh, totally. I held up my hand. Sorry, yes, we can do it some other time once we've all recovered. He nodded, and one of his weird, crooked smiles worked up his face. He looked out of the window.
It feels good to be asked.
You're a valuable member of the team. It's a no-brainer. His smile broadened.
Still feels good. That you think I'm good enough to join your team, that you don't look down on me for my oddities or my flaws.
I huffed out a laugh.
That would be something, wouldn't it? If I looked down on someone else for being odd and having flaws?
I raised my hand. Hello? Pot calling the kettle black. Besides, everyone in this house is unpardonably odd and has more flaws than normal qualities. You fit in just fine. Still smiling, still looking away from me, he nodded slowly.
I do fit in here, and maybe that's why she believed me.
Who? His eyebrows went up.
Oh, you. Sorry, I was lost in my thoughts.
Well, if that's all...
He partially stood.
I don't want to keep you from your alpha. I might go home and shower now after all. I suddenly feel invigorated.
I laughed and stood, wobbling a little. He stepped forward to steady me, backing off when I gave a thumbs up. Welcome in advance. To the team.
Thank you.
I trudged up to my bedroom, not sure how much fun I'd be with Austin since I could barely lug myself around. He'd have to do all the work, not that he'd mind. Soft candlelight greeted me when I opened the door, flickering in the dimly lit room. Fresh roses in a vase sat on my little table by the window, which also held a bottle of wine and two glasses. Austin sat on the edge of my bed, bare-chested and godly. The top button on his jeans undone and his feet bare. His smile dwindled, and his eyes took on a focused look to match the pulsing warmth radiating through the link. Something about the way he was sitting there, dressed down and gorgeous, weakened my knees and made my heart swoon. This powerful, fearsome alpha had always let me see his softer side,
the easygoing part of him with a little smile around his full lips. Both sides appealed to me, his power and strength and his smiles and laughter. I'd been lucky to have him as a friend for all these months, and I was luckier still to have this new intimacy I couldn't seem to get enough of. I hadn't even totally given in to it yet, and it had still consumed part of my soul. I'd need to figure all that out eventually. Today, though, I just needed to chill. It had been a long day. "Hey," I said, closing the door after me.
"Hey."
He held out his arms, and I walked into them, dropping my hand to his shoulder, feeling the electricity zing between us. He sat me down on his knee and ran his palm under my shirt and across my stomach.
"What do you think about a relaxing bath?"
he asked.
"You haven't felt one of my massages."
"Oh? Are they famous or something?"
"Probably not. I don't give them often, but I'm pretty sure they help pass the time."
I smiled and kissed his lips. "Sounds good." He waited for me to stand before joining me, grabbing the bottom of my shirt and readying to pull it off. A foot I didn't recognize stepped onto Ivy House soil. Austin paused. The intruder continued up the walk, the steps slow and clumsy, not in a straight line. A moment later, the person turned and ran off. Mr. Tom approached the front door and I waited to see what would happen, dread filtering through my middle. After every battle or magical hurdle, there was one person who'd always made his presence known, one person who'd always turned up. The front door opened. Mr. Tom stepped out. Shock blasted through the link, and then sorrow, and then rage. I was running before I'd made a conscious effort.
"Go get the miss!"
Mr. Tom shouted, perhaps to Ivy House, because no one else was there. "I'm here!" I took the stairs down, two at a time, Austin right behind me. "I'm here! What is it?" But he didn't need to answer me. As soon as I reached the threshold, I saw. Sebastian lay sprawled out on the grass, a knife in his heart, pinning a note to his chest. His face was so bloody that it was almost hard to tell who he was, but those sightless gray eyes were looking up at the sky. I recognized the shape of his face, too, and the clothes he'd been wearing when he'd left. I hadn't felt him on the ground, so he must have been force-fed the potion to hide him from Ivy House. I'd put up a spell to unmask that potion, but it hadn't bothered Sebastian, it seemed. "Because he's dead," I breathed, anger and sadness welling up through me. "My spell to unmask people seeks out pent-up energy and danger. He no longer has either." The note read, "This was my employee. Then he was your employee. Now he is no one's employee. Want to come over for a drink next month? I'll send a jet. Check yes or no." Two square boxes were under that. He literally wanted me to check a box. He'd likely magically receive the answer. His name was at the bottom, no PS this time. Tears clouded my vision. My hands balled at my sides. My gut twisted with guilt. I was the reason Sebastian was dead. He'd helped me, and I'd gotten him killed. I couldn't do this anymore. I couldn't live with that nutcase dogging my every step, watching me from the shadows. "Yes, I will meet him," I said through clenched teeth. "I will meet him face to face, and I will kill him for everything he's done to me. Someone get me a pen." "I have a confession," Ivy House said. I waited for more bad news and for a pen and for the sobs to come. There had been too much death today. Austin had lost a few of his people. We'd taken the lives of more people than I cared to admit, and now Sebastian was gone, the guy who was supposed to join my team, my house, my life. "I deadened my magic with the phoenix so you'd fight," she said. "You needed them on your side, and you also needed a little shove to give the blood oath. By putting you in a dangerous situation, I nudged you into it." I closed my eyes, breathing through my nose. "I don't care about that. I would have done it eventually anyway." "Just remember, I nudge because I love, and because sometimes you need it to reach your true potential." "This is not the time." "Good call. Chat later. Bye." What did she think, we were on a call? Mr. Tom handed me a pen. I reached down and checked yes.
The body disappeared. Elliot Graves was 10 times more advanced than I was, more experienced. If he'd employed Sebastian as a peon, then he was probably leagues above him in terms of magical ability. I gritted my teeth. I didn't care. I would take him on and I would end his meddling in my life. Epilogue.
It's been an enlightening visit, to say the least.
Kingsley said, standing with Austin and me in the front yard of Ivy House. The rest of my people were in the house, flying around the woods or tending to the flowers. Hollis had a green thumb, it turned out, and an eye for how a garden should look. He was quickly becoming Edgar's best friend. He didn't seem excited about that prospect. It was a week after we'd ended the threat of Kinsella, although we still had no idea what had happened to the mage. Austin's territory was as buttoned up as it needed to be, and Kingsley was anxious to get back to his family and his own territory.
"I haven't taken orders from anyone but my wife in a long time,"
Kingsley said, his eyes twinkling and a grin on his lips. He was usually only this free with facial expressions at Austin's house, but clearly he was making an exception.
"Not to mention I got to see some fabled creatures, including a female gargoyle and a freaking basajoun."
He shook his head.
"That thing was ruthless. I'm glad I got off his mountain alive. I would rather not tango with one of those." "I hear that,"
Austin said.
"Can you handle it if I hug her?"
Kingsley asked Austin.
"Yeah."
They weren't teasing. Kingsley stepped closer and wrapped me in a bear hug, lifting me up and shaking me a little. I groaned as the air was squeezed out of me. He set me down and backed away, laughing.
"It was good meeting you, Jesse Ironheart,"
he said.
"Thank you for pushing my brother back to his family. We've missed him. Maybe now he'll visit once in a while. And sorry about..."
He pointed at the grass.
"I don't tend to like mages, but he was all right."
I nodded, my guilt over Sebastian's death still fresh. "Thanks for coming," I said. "We couldn't have done it without you." He clapped Austin on the back.
"I figured I'd tell you here in front of Jess. The people I brought knew going in that they'd have a choice to stay here and join your pack at the end of all this. I brought the guys and gals who never wanted you to leave in the first place, plus some newbies who need more room to advance than is available right now in my pack. All but a couple of them are going to stay."
Austin's eyes widened.
"I can't let you do that. It's done. Consider it a territory-warming present. Once you get everything official, throw a huge feast for everyone." "You're too good to me, brother."
Austin put out his hand to shake. Kingsley grabbed it and pulled him in closer, bumping chests and patting him on the back.
"We're family, and family stick together. We want to hear from you. Aurora especially wants to hear from her Uncle Ozzy."
Austin nodded, his heart warm, his face unreadable. Kingsley nodded as though he knew how much his words meant to Austin, how much Austin had needed to hear them. Kingsley gave me one last nod.
"Take care of him, because he won't take care of himself, and let him take care of you. It's his job, and he won't want to do anything else."
"Okay." To Austin, he said,
"Don't let her get into any trouble." "Yeah, right, as though I could stop her,"
Austin replied with a laugh. Kingsley looked at Ivy House one last time and then turned toward Austin's waiting jeep. Austin gave me a quick kiss.
"Will you be around later?"
he asked. "Of course. I just have to finally sign the papers to make everything official with Ivy House, and then I'm free to leave."
"My house, then?"
He chuckled softly and kissed me again.
"I love you. See you tonight."
He was striding away before I could respond, which was maybe for the best. My heart fluttered with joy to hear it, but I was still afraid to say it, to feel it. It seemed too soon. It seemed not soon enough. Shaking my head, I headed into the house, up the stairs, and into the office, the furniture still the same as it had been on my last visit. I sat in the creaking leather chair and took a deep breath, placing my hands on the desk. "Mr. Tom?"
"You rang?"
He stepped into the room. I rolled my eyes. "The ledger, if you please."
"Yes, miss,"
he said, and I could tell he was almost giddy with excitement and trying not to show it.
He laid a large tome on the desk in front of me, years and years of markings contained within its pages. He opened the last used pages, the neat scrawl only reaching halfway down the second page. The total number in all the combined accounts stared back at me. "This is after the winery expenses, right?" I asked.
"Yes, as you will see here."
He traced a line farther up the page.
"The cash has been sent to the escrow account. Tomorrow you go in to sign a few more documents, and then it is all done."
"Right." I blew out a breath. "The blood oath is done, but I have to sign something, right?"
"Yes, for legal purposes."
He brought over a rolled-up parchment, flattening it out in front of me. He held out a fountain pen.
"Make your mark at the bottom."
A large X waited in front of a long line at the bottom of a document that was written in Latin or some other language I couldn't read. The text was dirty red and looked suspiciously like dried blood. "It isn't blood, though, right?" I asked Mr. Tom.
"It is blood," Ivy House said. "It is your blood, collected from the soil and transferred here after you assumed your power. You have but to sign, and it is done."
I hadn't put that much blood in the soil, but I didn't see the point in saying so. They just tell me this could all easily be explained by magic. I scribbled my name down. Mr. Tom nodded, collected the paper, and rolled it back up.
"Fantastic, miss. You are now officially the rightful heir to Ivy House. Congratulations. The Haverkamps no longer have a claim to this house, not that Peggy wanted it anyway after she was denied."
"Okay, then." I stared at the ledger. "We're going to automate this, I hope you know. Get a proper bookkeeping system up and running. Pay things online." Mr. Tom pursed his lips.
"If you say so."
"And this money..." I tapped the last number on the right. "I get that I can't pass it down or anything, but are there rules on what I can spend it on? Can I, like, buy a vacation house?"
"Yes, and Ivy House has several vacation houses and castles already. I haven't been to any of them, but the documents and details are in the filing cabinet. They probably all need work. Otherwise, you can do anything you like with it, miss, within reason. You can't give it all away to Austin Steele or anything like that, for example. You may donate to a reputable charity up to a certain percentage per year, and no, you cannot take it with you when you die. It stays with the house and will be transferred to the next heir. But you can pay off Jimmy's school tuition and your debts and maybe buy yourself a nicer car and better clothes and fix up the furnishings."
"Yes, yes, I get it."
"Maybe a haircut and something besides sweats and jeans might be nice."
"I got it. Fix myself up, loud and clear." I shook my head, letting it sink in. "I'm a billionaire."
"As long as you are living, yes, you're a billionaire. 160 times over. Not all liquid, though, let's be realistic."
I felt faint. "I might be the richest person in the world."
"Those things always change, but you'll certainly be one of them."
"What a crazy life."
"Yes, miss, I believe we covered that when you were trying to wrap your head around magic. Now, would you like to make any changes?"
I rubbed my eyes. "Give me some time to look through everything, Mr. Tom. I'm a whiz with a budget. Not that I expressly need that skill now, but I need some time to sort through all this handwritten stuff."
"Yes, miss, I'll bring up some coffee and snacks. Anything else?"
My head slid to what happened a week ago, to what would happen next month. "No thanks," I said, because money could fix many things, but it couldn't help me prepare for what I would be facing. I wasn't sure anything could. I'd need to learn attack and kill spells, and if I didn't basically use them before Elliot Graves could open his mouth, I'd be beaten before the duel started. Because it would be a duel, of that I was certain, and I did not intend to lose.
This has been Magical Midlife Love, a paranormal women's fiction novel, Leveling Up, Book 4, written by K.F. Breen, narrated by Nicole Poole. Copyright 2021 by Hazy Dawn Press, Inc. Production copyright 2021 by Hazy Dawn Press, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.